Welcome to Mastering Life's Adventures, an educational podcast about tapping into your true self, the soul, your soul, the substance of your life, to discover what life's ups and downs are really about, and how to have a greater sense of purpose, peace, joy, and fulfillment. I am Dr. Judith Holder, your host, coach, psychologist, fellow seeker who enjoys diving into the connections between spirituality, psychology, wellness, and your everyday life's adventures. All preparing and polishing you like the facets of a magnificent diamond to be your best self. If you're craving more from your life, you are in the right place. Come, let's journey together and transforming what you know into who you really are. Mastering Life's Adventures begins now. Hi, I'm back. I'm back to talk about a subject area that I think is something that we can always talk more, and that is children. I'm here with my guest, Tim. He'll introduce himself, but our specific topic is related to parenting our children with spirituality in mind. Tim, why don't you introduce yourself, and then let's take it away.
All right. Well, my name is Tim McCarthy. I taught school, both public and private, for 10 years. As part of that, moved up into administration. And then at the same time, I was studying the martial arts and eventually became a grand master in the martial arts. So I have an Eastern and Western experience and opinion of education, specifically of education of children.
Yes, and that's where we're going to be getting more into is this whole notion about how we are educating our children. And there may be some differences that need to occur in terms of education and a holistic perspective. But first, Tim, share a little bit about your journey.
Well, when I went to school, I really didn't know what I wanted to do. I just knew I wanted to go to college. So I started studying philosophy. And probably the second or third course, it questioned the mind and basically realized that you can't really trust your mind. And so if you can't trust the main tool in philosophy, what's the point? So that kind of dropped the bottom out of my philosophy ambitions. But they also offered to study a course in education with a minor in Bible. So I was able to study religion at the same time as getting a degree in education so I could become a teacher, which I really wanted to do, and also had a chance to study religion. I graduated, took a couple of years off, rode a motorcycle for a while.
Oh, you did?
Took a trip across the country. Had a great summer in Yellowstone Park. Worked as a cook and a houseman, which is a maid's assistant, Yellowstone. But it was a great summer. Waited tables, carried luggage, moved furniture, then decided to go into teaching.
What made you move from there to move? Like you had a hiatus in some ways, and you were contemplating and thinking about which direction you wanted to move in as you were in the big sky country, as they say in Montana.
Yeah, and not so much, that wasn't really the thinking point or that it was any different in the mountains there. It was just beautiful and fun, but kind of a break. I was an honor student in high school, and then I kind of took a year off. I just took courses and tried to learn without worrying about the grades, freshman, sophomore year. But then the strive toward perfection, the strive toward excellence, I guess is the better word, I ended up finishing with a 3.9 grade average. So I got back to it. And then when I graduated, let me take a break again from this academic. It was a grind. Mm-hmm. And so I went out and did different things and kind of searched for myself. I was a lifeguard. I did all kinds of fun jobs and then said, okay, time to grow up. Let's get back to teaching. So I put out like 250 applications around the state.
Really?
I got one to hit in a town that was so small that one day I came out of the classroom and there was a horse tied up outside the classroom. But that was my first teaching job. I learned a lot, got some good references, and then was able to move into the private school system with those references. and taught in the private school system for several years, moved up into administration. And then one day I'm sitting with my parents at my brother's house. They're watching the football game on a Sunday morning. I'm grading spelling papers. What's wrong with this picture? All right. So I said, I got to get out of this. I got to move up to administration. So I moved up into administration, became the dean of students. Mm-hmm. The dean of students in that school was the cop. So I spent the day dealing with the bad kids. But scholar athlete, I was also the basketball coach. The good part of my day was coaching and playing ball with the kids. The bad part of my day was dealing with the bad kids. Mm-hmm. And then the kids decided, and I had some good kids. We had a good shot at a state championship in a small, like single A field. They decided I was too tough on that. I was too much of a disciplinarian. Mm-hmm. So the parents got together. We had a meeting. We had a new principal. And so he listened to the meeting and said, these kids need a different coach. They fired me as the basketball coach. Mm-hmm. And the parents weren't really asking for that. The parents were just saying, hey, separate your roles so the kids don't understand you're trying to be a tough guy with them. Just, you know, tell them you're dean during the day, you're coach in the afternoon and at night, and just make that clear. But the new principal decided it was easier to get rid of me.
Wow. So, how did that impact you? I mean, you weren't going to be fired.
It crushed me. That was my, that was my fun of my day. Mm-hmm. And so kind of result of the story, those kids got caught drinking alcohol on the bus on the way home from a game. And a bunch of them got suspended from the team and almost thrown out of school. So was I too tough on them? The new coach had to deal with it. So that was a small vindication to me, but didn't really change things. I was still not coaching the kids and trying to help them. And who knows if they would have done that with me or not, we don't know. But anyway, it put me in a situation where the good part of my day was gone. The bad part of my day was there front and center. So I put in my resignation at the end of the year. Of course, I finished my commitment. And at the end of the year, I quit. Mm-hmm. And so here I am, honor student, got fired. So I decided, well, I went out and became an educational consultant and worked for a private company. I would travel from county to county, help kids learn. This is in the early days of computers. Help kids learn how to use computers remedially. Mm. And they had remedial classrooms for the computers. And you also taught the kids how to do it at home. They even had a program where you could take the computer home if you met certain economic problems. And so I would teach the kids, teach the parents how to use the computer. And I got fired from that job. So
what happened? Again,
well, I was wrong, basically. There was a teacher who was lazy, who was not using the curriculum. And so I tried to make it look like the teacher was not using the curriculum. So basically, she wasn't doing her job. I was going to try to help her get fired. Mm. And instead, she got me fired. Mm. So, and that's always a chance you take. Lesson learned. But getting fired twice in 2 years for somebody who, again, had been an approval junkie, who always wanted to be the best student, wanted to be the best player, set me back. And I said, well, what if I won the lottery tomorrow, what would I do? I'd continue practicing the martial arts full time. So I have a friend who used to tell me as a joke, fire me, I'm too dumb to quit. Well, maybe that's what happened to me.
Go ahead, finish your thought.
I was going the wrong direction. It wasn't a bad direction, teaching and an educational consultant, but the right direction for me was martial arts. And I didn't have the smarts to choose it. So maybe I needed to be pushed into it.
Yeah, I think sometimes when you were talking about some of the experiences that you had, it actually relates to what happens to the soul. So the soul may move along in a path, but somehow the universe saying, this is not quite it.
Yeah.
You know, close, and then.
Close but no cigar.
And but it's okay, but you'll learn certain experiences, you'll gain certain wealth of information, you'll have a better understanding of kids and their psychology and how they look at things and how they want to approach things. And then what happens is sometimes the universe says that when we make choices and decisions that occur with the second firing that happened, it was like, you know what, we're going to help you out here because we want you to learn this issue around, because that's what the soul is all about, is learning lessons around being straightforward. and so what better way of learning this lesson of being straightforward is just the opposite happens, as you say. So it's like, wow, what happened to me? And but it's still learning the lesson because there's certain experiences you learn from that, not only that lesson, but also being a consultant. So it's as if unknowingly we're getting these different experiences and maybe we haven't connected the dots all the way to what's going to be the next thing. But what came up for you, which comes up for the soul too, is what do I love? What do I love doing in martial arts? Go ahead.
Yeah. And it isn't, it may feel like a setback, but as they say, it's a set up for the next thing. Mm-hmm. And you just have to have the resilience or the soul searching to find out what the lesson is.
Yes. Yes. Very true. Because sometimes if we shut down, then we're not open to the fact that that was just a stepping stone. That was just a setup, as you said, but continue to look. But there's a fortitude that you have, which is within your soul, a fortitude to be able to say, you know what? I've got the information. I got the knowledge. I got the persistence. I've got the discipline. I've got these things that can help me continue to stay on the path and not get kind of pulled off or derailed from getting an understanding of what my mission is and my direction I want to live in life that gives me some reward and enjoyment and also service in some way.
And if you're in a river, why fight the current? God, I want to do this. I want to do this. And all the signs say, I'm not supposed to do that. Well, then go with the flow a little bit and see maybe where the river wants to take you.
Or even the ocean, which is behind you.
Yes, and I love to spend time there.
Well, to help you flow towards. I say sometimes in my podcast, there's three ways in which we need to be aware of the initiations and testings that are occurring in our life. One is like the ocean that you have there floating and just being aware and being attuned, taking in the sun, taking in the breeze, taking in everything and just contemplating. And another way that we need to be is like a, which I call that the cork and water, you know? And then the other quality that's important is on a skateboard. And when you're on a skateboard, what you're doing, you may be going fast or slow on that skateboard, but you're just trying to stay on the skateboard, observe around you and look what is going on around you and take that in and keep on moving, you know? And then the other last component that I say we need to be is like on a trampoline, we need to bounce. We need to bounce to see something higher. We need to see the higher view of what's going on and that we can't see at the lower view. And so even those experiences that we have are teaching us in those three ways and some of the ways you're talking about as well, for everyone to be able to not get, like you said, I think you said it was, how was the word you used, squelched or crushed? I think that's the word you used. Not to get crushed by life's experiences, but instead see it as, oh, there's something I need to look at here.
Yes. And the less they say, the lesson will be repeated until it is learned. And
correct.
So if the same thing keeps happening to you, take a look at what's causing that or what about you is inviting it and learn the lesson and move on.
Yes. Yes. And I call those themes. There are themes to our life. And those themes and patterns that are happening is, like you say, you can have a blind eye towards it and just kind of be curious and befuddled. Or we can say, take a step back, look and say, what's happening here? What is the universe trying to tell me? And then move forward with that. So you were talking about martial arts.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, anyway, so I became a martial arts teacher. And that was the first phase of it. I was the full-time teacher at the school. Much like the old Kung Fu movies, my master at the time said, yes, you can work here, but instead of making me wait out in the rain for a week without food like they do in the comic movies, he said, you can work here, but you have to volunteer full time without pay. Mm-hmm. Basically, he wanted to know that I was serious about it, that I wasn't going to just, you know, work for a couple of months, get a new job and leave him. Mm-hmm. And so I did. I volunteered for a month, enjoyed it, eventually got paid, actually got paid more than I was getting as a teacher, which wasn't hard.
Right.
Funny aside, I was at a party one time. One of the teachers in the private school system was moving up. She took a job with a regular company and invited her friends from the school, invited her friends, the engineers from the company. And this guy was talking. He says, yeah, you know, these are the kind of people that make, you know, $15,000 a year, if you know what I mean. And I said, yes, I know exactly what you mean, exactly who those people are. Me. But anyway, started pursuing the career in the martial arts, added my educational background to it, started with newsletters. We did a magazine. We ended up doing programs to help school owners keep their school open with business advice. My master happened to be an outstanding business person. Mm. So I learned a lot about business from him, and I helped him write books, develop videos. We eventually met a guy who taught after school martial arts and developed that program. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't getting much success in getting it out. So again, we worked with him, publicized his program, and just about in every city across the country, you can see after school martial arts program or summer camp martial art program signs on the side of the road. We helped popularize that. Mm-hmm. And I did my educational background to that to make it a more educationally sound course.
Mm. See, all that wealth of information you learned along the way with the experiences you had allowed you to be able to do something more expansive than you would have ever thought or imagined that you could be able to do.
Yeah, that I wouldn't have thought or imagined, exactly. But the river pushed me. I was too dumb to quit, so I got fired. But I had the grit, I had the growth mindset to be able to pick myself up and say, okay, where do we go from here?
Mm-hmm. So with all those experiences and the grit mindset, and I'm talking about parenting our children with spirituality in mind, tell me a little bit more about how that has evolved for you with these four dimensions that you may want to share with the seekers.
All right. So I like to think we're living in a two-dimensional world more and more. A two-dimensional world is the world of screens. Your phone has length and width, but no depth. All right. Your television, the same thing. Your computer, the same thing. So the more time we spend on screens, the more time we're living in a two-dimensional world. I want to raise children in a four-dimensional world. So that's length and width, but also depth and duration. According to H.G. Wells, the fourth dimension is time. If it doesn't exist for any period of time, for any duration, we don't experience it. It's not part of our world. Mm-hmm. So those are the four dimensions of the real world. But there are also four dimensions of being human, in my opinion: the physical, the mental, the emotional, and the spiritual. And so we have bodies that we need to take care of. And in order to, the body, an unhealthy body creates an unhealthy mind. So yes, take care of your body physically. Mentally, we have a separate mental dimension, the area of logic, reason. And as human beings, we tend to emphasize that or overemphasize that. People say, what separates man from the animals? Well, it's his intellect. So if his intellect is what separates him from the animals, then let's judge everything by the intellect, mm-hmm. by logic. Mm-hmm. Doesn't work. Mm-hmm. Because you've also got an emotional aspect. Mm-hmm. You need to learn how to feel, how to deal with your emotions, and to love. And so what's the logical explanation of love? There isn't one. So the mind does not have dominance or rule over the heart. The mental dimension does not rule or is not more important than the emotional dimension. And finally, the fourth dimension, physical, mental, emotional, is spiritual. And the spiritual dimension is separate from, but connected to, the others. I believe it's very important to raise children with four dimensions. And in this podcast, we can focus a little more on the spiritual development of kids.
Yeah, I would really think that would be fascinating to the seekers to be able to do that. And I had a comment as you were talking. We do have an overemphasis in the intellect, and that the intellect rules. And that has now propagated the ego, what I call ego persona. And so the ego rules. So it compares. It's competitive. It's always looking for me. What's in it for me? All the time. And then the emotional part of ourselves, if it's because the intellect is kind of unbalanced in society, and the emotions become really small in some ways, we become temper tantrums. We get angry very easily. We get annoyed very easily. And what you're saying, in some ways too, there needs to be a balance of these dimensions. And then there is the spiritual dimension, which is the dimension I have a very strong interest in. Because that's where the soul is, and that's where the Christic light and virtues and being able to learn how to connect with something more than yourself so that you have greater meaning and purpose in life. It's going to be fascinating to have this conversation with you as we're just thinking about children and thinking about how parents are parenting their children and what are the better ways of doing that from the three dimensions as well as the fourth, which is the spiritual dimension.
Absolutely. When thinking about the spirit, first of all, I believe, and I would imagine it would be helpful to accept the fact that we are spiritual beings having a physical experience. We're not physical beings having a spiritual experience. We have a soul that's put into this body. Why? My opinion, to learn. Okay. I had written a movie. And basically, the crux of the movie was, this world is a school for souls. God got together a class, and he took the four archangels and said, okay, your class project is to create a school for souls. I want to put the souls in your school, and you teach them. How do you want to do that? And they developed this world, this life where we live in. The soul gets put into this body with a brain that slowly develops, and it limits the unbelievable possibilities of the soul, and it limits it to this very narrow world we're living in as a way to learn. So I don't know if you want to comment on that.
I really do. I love the fact, because I do say the world that we exist in is a schoolroom.
Yes.
With different grades.
Different grades.
Okay. You know, from K through 12, and also college and technical school and everything, all the dimensions. You're right. So the archangels and formulating the school or the school systems, I think, is wonderful. I think we just have gone straight away from the divine intent, what schooling was supposed to be. And it was supposed to be with the soul in mind. And it was supposed to be so the evolutions of the soul. And that's what Montessori came to teach us too, to be able to understand these dimensions that, as you said earlier, the mental, emotional, physical dimensions of who we are become the stepping stone to the soul's evolution and the soul's advancement in terms of the spirituality. But if we keep those dimensions small, then we limit ourselves, because God is infinite. And what the soul is kind of here to learn are infinite types of lessons that are unique for each soul. But if we had a cookie cutter for everything, then how is that unique to the soul?
Exactly.
It's not unique to the soul. And that cookie cutter now becomes constricted and actually a ball in weight around the soul's evolution and its ability to grow and advance in far ways than we can ever know. Because we're only seeing certain dimensions, not the total dimensions in which the spirit or the soul is trying to get to.
Absolutely. Let's start with how the brain develops, and therefore the spirit develops with it. In an infant, actually pre-infant, you can start developing your child in the womb by singing religious songs, by meditating, by creating this feeling the soul can relate to while the baby's in the womb. those are just very simple things. And talk to the baby. And
yeah,
just
that's very important.
Positive affirmations while the baby's still in the womb. Same thing with an infant. The soul is complete, even though the brain is developing rapidly. And so there aren't specific things you do to a baby other than just be yourself and have your spirit talk to the baby's spirit.
Yeah, I'd like to add to that.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Because as an infant, it's really actually an opportunity for the parents to be able to hold that child. Also to be able to caress the child, to know that the soul and that body, the soul is wanted, is loved, is appreciated. And then as you're talking to that baby, it actually allows them to hear the frequencies of your voice and also the frequencies of the father's voice and get in tune with that. And also start in waking with them knowing that they're going to start to evolve and grow. It's like the more that we can talk to children in the womb, as well as, you know, as our baby, the more that they can be able to say, oh, I have an opportunity here. I have an opportunity to be able to maybe accelerate my growth because my parents are aware, they're alert.
Yes. And love is an important, not the only, but an important path to spiritual growth. And so it is an emotion. It's not really spiritual, it's emotional, but it's a path, a well-established path to spiritual growth. If your baby feels loved, then that's a way to advance the soul, as opposed to if the baby feels isolated, now it has to overcome that issue before it can reach onto the spirit.
Correct, exactly. But I would add to what you're saying that because of the love that is emanated, and this is the unseen dimensions of love. Because you're having that baby and you're loving that baby and you're talking gentle and cooing and calling types of ways, that vibration goes out and ripples and that soul feels that. The soul is able to be able to say, oh, okay. And it can like wake up a little bit more as opposed to being born in a dense body and feeling like, oh, I just need to sleep. Sleep my way through this experience that I'm in right now.
All right. And so as the child develops, the terrible twos is an emotional time, but the child spiritually is still responding to punishment and reward. And so that's a very low level of spiritual development. And this is the kind of Old Testament God will strike you with fire and brimstone, as opposed to the New Testament, which is based on love. So, personal opinion, man, it's been said that God is a reflection of man. Man has created God in his own image. My take on that is God has revealed himself to man in man's own image. So in other words, when you're ready for it, God will reveal himself in a different way. And so as a child, you learn right and wrong by punishment and reward. I'm an approval junkie. If you approve me, I want to do more of whatever that is. All right. And if I get punished, if I get fired, I want to do less of that. And so as a child, that's their only level of understanding up until maybe 5 years old is punishment and reward. And I'm not saying you need to spank the child. Sometimes a harsh look is all the punishment that's needed to say that's not the right way to do things.
Mm-hmm.
A caress, a positive word. So that's a very low level. Again, up to the age of five, that's what they're responding to morally and spiritually. And so that's how you have to teach them at that age.
And I would add to that, because I'm going to add some things, because you're peeking in my mind some wonderful thoughts here, is that in that age group of 2 to 5, there's a degree, even the terrible twos, what they're learning is mastering their body a little bit more. And at the age of 3, they're learning to have a little bit more control over kind of what is going on. And at the age of 4, they're learning to be obedient to the promptings of their parents, which represents God in their world in many regards. In the age of 5, they're learning really the understanding of this, having a greater sense of wisdom about what I can and what I'm not able to do, actually the experience of being disciplined and not being punished, but being disciplined to help them to know, just as there's a bowling alley and you have to pull the ball down there and the guardrails go up. Well, the guardrails are the parents and the ball is the child going down so they can get a strikeout and say, okay, you did that well. That's on the right path. That's great. And moving them along to, and helping them to see at a soul level, yeah, all this is connected to helping me to be better and have greater mastery over myself. Because between 2 and 5, and even the higher, that's what we're learning how to do. How do I master these emotions? And how do I master these impulses that I have and I want to do something with? And that's all a part. And what parents end up doing is they get frustrated and angry and annoyed at their child because the child is curious. The child is curious. They want to learn, they want to explore, they want to see different things. So they're always going to be looking under something or crawling up on something because that's their exploration. And what parents have to know is a form of discipline that helps them know what is right, what is not quite right. How do you give them enough space to learn those things, but not to the point that they can harm themselves in any particular way?
Children are scientists. They go by the experimental method. If I do this, what happens? And especially around 5, they get to the cause and effect. They start understanding cause and effect. If I do this, then that will happen. And basically, it's their job. I mean, why does the kid throw food on the floor? He wants to see what happens. Why does he play with it? He wants to see what it feels like. What it How it feels in the hand, what it feels like on your face. And so they're doing experiments basically to find out. And so treat the child as a scientist and say, okay, this is what happens when that happens. But especially don't expect to get much cause and effect understanding before the age of 5. Just punishment reward. At 5, they start to get the cause and effect. If you do this, then that will happen. This is where the timeout comes in. And it starts to work because they understand if I did that, that's what happened. And if you separate by time the action and the punishment, it's really hard to connect it until they're a little bit older. So you have to basically, any discipline has to happen at the time. My thing is habits. You want to instill in them the positive habit. So if you've done something wrong, if you did it the wrong way, let's practice the right way. And then I give you a big hug for doing it the right way. And so whatever it is they did wrong, let's practice doing it right.
Yeah, and it's for like, and this is where the observation of parents become helpful. The observation to see what their children are doing and how they are operating and how your unique personalities are starting to come out, even at a young age, about what they like, even what they'd like to put on at 5 and 6 years old, what they don't want to put on. And so it really becomes that becomes the avenue by which parents can understand how they may help the child to practice. And in interesting, unique ways that keeps the child a little bit more interested because children are very distractible at that, especially at that age.
Absolutely, and that's one of that's discipline more possibly a different field, but one of the things to do at that time is to distract the child rather than to try to punish them. If they are banging a plate, you don't want them to bang the plate and say, "Here, hold the rattle." And then, okay, so that's redirecting rather than one of the better forms of discipline for a young child. At 5 to 7, that's where they start to like to learn about the rules. Rules are important. They want to learn the rules. They want to know the rules. And later, towards 7, they start even looking at whether or not you broke the rules. All right. But they don't tend to realize, they don't have the awareness to realize that they broke the rules. So sometimes, like a 5 or 6 year old will know that it's wrong to steal, but they don't realize that taking the candy and putting it in their pocket in the store is stealing. And so there's an education process where you know that it's wrong to steal. What do you call putting the candy in your pocket? Did you pay for it? Well, no. Isn't that stealing? Oh, yeah. Okay. And so there's that education process where they learn the rules, first of all, And then they learn to apply the rules to themselves as they get a little bit older.
Yeah, and that's a very good point, because we are sometimes thinking that the child should know better. And reality, why? they're little ones. They're learning the world and the world of that particular culture or that custom or that those norms within that particular family, even not just the society, what's right and wrong. It is interesting that at that age too, there's a lot of patience that's needed for the parents. The parents, and when we can be patient, knowing that you're helping to cultivate the soul's growth. You're helping to understand that the soul is at a point now which it has a greater awareness to be if it's not sleeping, because some souls can sleep throughout their life. But if the soul is aware, it can be able to say, okay, one of the things I'm learning at 6 years old is maintaining my harmony. The soul's learning that. At the 7 year that you're talking about, is learning how to be grateful, because sometimes kids can be very ungrateful. They throw things out. I don't want that. But the parents teaching the child how to have gratitude in small ways and what that looks like, and helping them to evolve in their soul growth and evolution.
And one of the greatest ways to do that is through prayer. Mm-hmm. No matter whether it's Jehovah, Jesus, Allah, mm-hmm. whoever. If you can teach your child to pray at night before you go to bed, let's go over the things we're thankful for. Thank God for this and for this and for this. And now let's thank God for the people in our life, Aunt Marion and Uncle Bill and Cousin Judy, and just go over. Now, if you aren't religious, you can still do the same thing in a very secular way by saying, okay, let's review the day. What are some good things that happened today? Mm-hmm. And who's in our life that we're really grateful for? Okay. So religious or not religious, that's a wonderful practice at the end of the day to teach gratitude. And gratitude goes a long way in happiness. I mean, even as an adult.
Mm-hmm. It certainly does. And it also goes a long way in helping to cultivate love through the gratitude and appreciation and care that we're showing in helping the soul to evolve, to understand these qualities of love that transcend the years, whatever a child is, but it helps to be building blocks for the soul and the child to understand, okay, I can love and I can appreciate and I can value people in my lives and the things I have around me. And that goes, as I said, such a long way to help the child to understand and getting connected to their heart and connected to their soul substance and their intuition as well.
Absolutely. 7 years old, a lot of traditions have an event because the child's awareness starts to change. If you're in the rules phase, 5 to 7, you're looking for equal distribution. Okay, so if there's a $5 allowance and two kids, we each get $2.50. Okay, we want everything has to be equal. There's five candies, two for you, two for you, one for you. The fairest way we can, by the rules, equal distribution. By 7, they're starting to move a little bit away from this rules base and starting to take into account the opinions of others. And so you have your teachers. And what the teacher says is important. What the parents say is important. What the religious leader says is important. What the coach says is important. And so the opinions of others start to guide. And what WWJD, what would Jesus do? That mentality, what would my mom do? What would my coach say? But then also they switch to a distribution by merit. If mom only has enough money for one pair of shoes, your shoes are good and your sister's shoes have holes in them. At this age, you start to understand, well, buy the shoes for my sister. That's a developmental thing in the child. The child's brain is ready for that. But it's also some adults haven't moved to that phase yet. They weren't brought to it and they could. Let me, if I may, mm-hmm. One of the great things of teaching children. A wise teacher once said that children are not brought into our lives for us to teach them. They are brought into our lives for them to teach us. Mm-hmm. And in many ways, the parent can learn more by teaching the student, or even grow more by helping the child grow, than they actually grew in their own life. And so teaching children does teach the parent, and can help the parent, in a sense, jump ahead or stay ahead of the child. In my first year of teaching, I was given a curriculum, and I had to try to stay 2 weeks ahead of the students. I would try to read the story ahead and prepare the lesson. Same thing with parenting. As you're helping your child grow, you're kind of forced to stay 2 weeks ahead of your child to be a little more advanced so that you know the way to teach your child.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes, and that does take in some reflection and contemplation and readings that the parent will do to help them to be able to do that. And when you were talking about the distribution of merit, that you know, felt right on target. That's what we're all learning how to do. In some ways, you know, if we pass those types of initiations at that young age, and if we have it, it still circles back around to say, okay, can you see this based upon merit or versus upon rules? That happens. And so those lessons are continuing to happen. Those connecting of the dots become important, because there's some things we may have missed as a child, but it doesn't mean they're not going to circle back around to see if we can be able to do it better or do it differently or be aware of it as an adult. And the other point that you were making that I thought was great was you were talking about 7, and I was thinking about 8. My mind went to 8, because you know, some of the things you were talking about at 7, I have thought about as when a child is 8 years old, and that is the issue of justice or injustice that happens for children. Their sense of injustice of what you're talking, that 7, 8, you know, range that can go on, and that's where children can become stubborn, you know, too, because they're feeling as if, well, he could do it, why can't I do it? And maybe because it's not the right thing to do, regardless of he did it or she did it. And so it's really the parent's responsibility to be alert and aware of the fact that how you're raising your child at these young ages really sets the foundation to how they will be as they're moving along in their life. Any comments to saying to that as we're, you know, talking about the first 7 to 8 years of life and winding down for this part of our discussion?
No, I think that's great. And again, if by chance you're listening to this and you recognize yourself in what we're talking about, understand that there is future. There is a future growth. There are next steps to take. Hopefully, we'll talk about some of them in the next interview. But the internet can be a wonderful place to learn. And so, if you can identify, oh, I need to learn this, it's not hard to find how to learn it. And just get out there and do a little digging and learn it. If you need to learn it to stay 2 steps ahead of your child, or you just recognize that, wow, that's where I am, and there's someplace else to go, there's a higher level. How can I reach that higher level? Search for it.
Yes. And you can also have a coach to help you with that awareness and building for yourself. As well as, like you're saying, the internet, which is filled with marvelous resources that can be available to you personally, and as well as a parent in your evolution and wanting to raise spiritually gifted children who are more attuned to with their understanding of their soul evolution. Because as a child, they've just come into this existence, but they came from a realm of a higher realm. And they're closest to God, quote unquote. So how do you help to flourish that and help to develop that within the child and not squelch it or kind of make it confined in a confinement of only do these things, only look at it this way? Because a child has a curiosity. And as you said earlier, Tim, children are teaching us all the time that the parents can learn from. Just as much as the parents are teaching the child, it's like a figure eight flow that goes back and forth in the learning process if the parent is open to that process. So I thank you for this conversation. It's been a delightful conversation to have about this and looking at it more from a spiritual dimension in terms of how to really parent our children with spirituality in mind. And is there anything else you want to leave with a seeker?
Well, just to recommend, if you're curious about this, if you're curious about raising 4-dimensional children, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, check out my book. If you go to Amazon, just look up Raising Four Dimensional, and that should put you there. Or go directly to my website, which is 4D-2D, and D as in dimension. And you can't forget the dash. You end up in China somewhere. That's one of the wonders of the internet. But 4D-2D.com. I've tried to make it affordable. If you're economically challenged, you can buy the chapter for your child for under a dollar. Not looking to get rich, looking to help you be a better parent.
Wow. Well, that's very gracious of you. And that's a nice servant way to try to say these things that I have available that I've learned in my experiences that I want to share with you now in terms of the parent to help you to be more in tune to the fact that you have a wealth of knowledge that you can at your fingertips if you choose to go down that alley of the internet or go with Tim and look at his website and what he has there on Amazon. Tim, this has been a great conversation to have and think about our children, because I think they are so needed right now for parents and who are in search of, you know, this four-dimensional raising of a child versus the 2D, as you're talking about. So thanks again. And I really would invite you to reach out to Tim and to get his book, as well as look at his website, because it would be rewarding to you and helping you to raise your children in a more effective and a more holistic way as we move into this 21st century. Bye for now. Take care. Thank you for joining me for this episode on Mastering Life's Adventures, being your best self through soul evolution. If you have enjoyed what you've heard today, I would be delighted if you would share this episode with others, leave a thumbs up, and subscribe to my Mastering Life's Adventures podcast. Look forward to your joining the next episode. Please leave any comments or suggestions you might have below. Bye for now.